turning.
Yes, well, it was turning before. Interview with Mr. Clucas Crellin on the 1st of February with Yvonne Cresswell, and talking about the Salt House in Peel. So this is the photograph of your grandfather.
That's my grandfather and grandmother, and this was my mother, and they're all dead now. There's none of them alive now. This was a sister. She emigrated to South Africa, lived and died in South Africa, and she eventually emigrated to Australia after her husband died.
Right.
Went out there with her son. She was a spinster aunt, and he was a Methodist minister, Reverend John Clucas, and he has a son living in Godalming or somewhere, Sir Kenneth Clucas. He was a senior civil servant in the Labour, in the old Labour office in London.
Right.
No, before that he was a diplomat in Egypt with Sir Ralph Stevenson, who was the Manx, what was he? He was a Manxman who was in the British civil service. What's the word I'm looking for? He was the representative of the Queen.
The governor?
No. This was in Egypt.
Well, the ambassador.
Ambassador, that's the word.
Yes.
It wouldn't come. Yes, he was the ambassador in Egypt, and Kenneth, my cousin, he was the Labour attaché in those days. And then from that he came back to London, and still in the Labour office, I think it was, and he finished up the top civil servant there, and when he was ready to retire he was knighted. So he's some years younger than me, about 73 or something like that.
So talking about what we were talking about before, about
yes.
the Salt House. So your grandfather was born in Glenmay.
He was born in Glenmay, and he had a business in Glenmay, which is where the post office is now, at the top of the hill in Glenmay. And then in 1912 he moved into Peel as a grocer and corn merchant into number 8 Douglas Street, which is now a carpet shop, I think.
Yes.
Carpet shop and a fruit shop next door. Well, in my young days, that fruit shop was the front room of the house. And my grandfather converted it into another shop for selling hardware and dog foods and things like that. And the other side was the grocery shop. Tea and coffee and bacon and one thing and another. And we have to think about the prices that we used to pay.
Right, yes.
Compared with now.
Thank you.
The tape recorder didn't work, so I've got to go over it again. Have you got yours?
No, I'm going out now. I'll have one down at Heathercliff.
Oh, you go down there? Oh.
Yeah, I'll walk through the park.
Do you want me to come down and pick you up?
No, I'll walk home. All right?
Yes.
So he used to rent the first floor of the Salt House, and how did he use the first floor of the Salt House?
I don't know. Thursday with a horse and cart which he hired once a week to go out to Glenmay and Derby with grocery orders, going to the farms and the houses out there. And I think the oats and things that he used to get, it must have been a bit of barter, I think.
Right.
Because I was too young to be consulted in those days. I was just told I did these things, you know. So, and it was never discussed with me, but I presume that's what it was. Because when I left school and when I became 16 from the grammar school, I had no choice of doing anything. I was told I was going into the shop.
Right.
And I had the sign. He wrote out an indenture. And I had to be up at 8 o'clock every morning. I had to brush the shop floor. I had to wash the shop windows. And I had to be in the shop then from 8 o'clock until 6 o'clock at night with an hour off at lunch for half a crown a week.
Right.
And I was 16 then.
Half a crown a week, wasn't it,
yes,
Digger?
Yes.
That was his grandfather. And he was a local preacher, his grandfather.
So with that, when I went into the shop then at 16, I used to have to go out with the groceries to Glenmay and Derby, and we used to go once a week.
Right.
On a Thursday morning. Hail, rain or shine. And mostly it wasn't bad. And then we used to collect eggs, Manx butter, and bartering, of course, to take the eggs and the butter in and take that off the bill for the for the groceries. And I presume he did that with the corn as well.
Right.
Although I've got really don't know very much about that part of it at all. But I know there were sacks and sacks and sacks of oats in the salt house, and they were in large sacks of it. It was a bowl of oats, B-O-double-L, and I think it was it weighed about 100 weight and a half.
Right.
But I think a bowl was about 4 bushels or something. It wasn't a weight. It was a quantity.
Right.
Yes, I think that's what it was.
Bye bye. See you later.
Bye.
Yes. Okay.
So the oats used to be stored in the salt
there until I don't know what he did with it. I don't know. Did he ship it out from the warehouse and ship it to the mainland, or what he did with it? Because that happened when I was at school,
right.
And I didn't know anything about it then, of course. But I knew all I was doing was going down to sort of close the place up.
Right. If you could describe sort of coming back from school. If you could describe coming back from school and closing up
in
the evening.
Well, after coming back on the train.
Yes.
Well, I was at Park Road, 1924 to 27. And we used to leave Peel in the morning on the 7:20 train, arrive in Douglas at about 8 o'clock. And then we used to walk from the railway station up to Park Road. Do you know where Park Road is? We walk up to Park Road. In the summertime, if the weather was nice, we used to go round at North Quay, along the promenade, up Broadway, and in Park Road that way. But in the wintertime, it was the short way. And then that was school all day. And then home at night, 4:30 train from Douglas, 5:20 in Peel. Walk up to the shop, have tea. We used to have put any messages, you know, any orders that had to be delivered. I used to have to do them then. Do that until 6:30, I suppose. Then come back, do my homework, and then go down and close the place up down on the quay. And I can particularly remember or late. It must have been getting well into October, I suppose, because it was pretty dark when I went down this night, and the place was alive with rats. Never seen so many rats in all mine. There must have been hundreds of them. When I opened the door, and they scattered, just disappeared. But we had a little dog in those days, but I wouldn't go down without the dog after that. It was terrifying.
What, I mean, did you often have a problem with sort of rats and mice?
That was the only time I ever remember them, but they were probably there all the time. But I can't recall ever seeing them again, only this once. Oh, it was terrifying. They were all over the place. The whole sort of the whole length of the warehouse. Yeah. So in do you want me over inside?
Yes, yes, if you describe the inside.
Well, inside then it was just one great big wide wooden floor with metal supports. Wooden shutters for windows which opened outwards, and the door for taking delivery of the stuff coming in and out was in the centre, and it had this rope pulley, and it seemed to be automatic. You used to pull one rope, and the pulley used to work up and down and pull it again, and it would stop. So that must have gone right up to the top of the building. But I never knew what was up there. I didn't ever go up to see. But I do remember a cart coming underneath and them taking sacks of corn up now, mm-hmm. come to think back, up on that pulley. But which part of sort of the peel area the oats came from, I don't know very much about that at all. And there'll be none of the old farmers left now to find out where it came from now. Upstairs on the next floor, I would remember the nets being up there. And I think once when I went up, there were three ladies over there. And one of them, I remember rightly, was Mrs. Wilmot. And she lived in a house which was just off the quay. Along from the warehouse, there was the Plymouth Brethren. Then there was those stables, big stables, where the hearse and the black horses and the coaches for funerals was in there. Then there was another area, and then there was Keg's stable yard. In behind that, there was a cottage, and I think this Mrs. Wilmot lived in that cottage along with, I think she had two daughters. And the street the lane that comes down from Castle Street. Oh God, what's that called?
St. Peter's Lane.
Yeah. Down to the bottom of St. Peter's Lane, there was a turning in on the right, mm-hmm. and there was a double-fronted cottage facing you. Well, they lived in that cottage. I don't know whether it's still there or not. I haven't been in Peel for some time now. So. Or at least round about that area. So I think it was what the name was.
What did it smell like? You were saying that the building smelled of the net.
It was a peculiar smell. It was a mixture between sea salt and rope. I don't know. But they used to bark the nets.
Yeah.
Well, I remember two places where they barked the nets. One was in where Dickie Crane has got a Empire Garage now at the bottom of Stanley Road. There was a barking pit there, and there was one You know where they've knocked down the cottages where Granger's Cafe was?
Yes.
You know, the Kirby's stable yard was in there. And in behind there, they had a bark pit in there too, where they used to bark the nets. I don't know how they did. I remember the stuff was hot, there was steam coming from it, it was brown.
Yes.
And they used to put bundles of nets down. And then they used to take them from there on carts up to where the power station is now, of those fields, and they used to spread them out there to dry then.
Right.
And I remember where the power station is now, that's the first football field of Peel Football Club that I remember before they moved up to Tinnell Road.
Right. If you could describe, I mean, the barking pits were outside.
Yes, they were outside.
So was it sort of like a hole dug in the ground?
It's a rectangular hole down in the ground. How they heated the water up, I don't know, but I know it was hot water, and it was brown.
Right.
And the steam was coming up from it. And they used to put a bundle of nets down and leave it to soak, and then they'd take them out, let them drain, and put them onto a cart and take
right.
them up and spread them out on the fields to dry.
Right.
So, and then about the Weybridge.
Yes.
and the salt house itself. Well, the salt house that I remember was on the ground floor on the
right-hand
side of the main door. And it was just a big pile of salt. And they had a scale. It wasn't a scale, it was a measure. Used to go for a kitchen of salt, which was something about, I know, was it half a bushel, a quarter of a bushel or something. It wasn't a weight at all, it was a measure. And then that Dale's shop, which is now an electrical shop or something on the corner of Castle Street, well, they were the people who dealt with the salt. So if you wanted salt, you had to go up to Dale's shop and get somebody to come. Come out to come down to give you the salt and open up and give you the salt
right.
and put it into a bucket or a box or something.
Right.
Or very often it was a pillowcase and get the salt in a pillowcase. And they weren't the only people who sold salt. There was another grocer at the top of Castle Street where the antique shop is
yes.
now. That was John Garrett. He was a grocer.
Right.
And in along St. Peter's Lane, which was part at the end of his house, which was attached to the shop, he had a store there with coarse salt in as well, which you, again the same way with a kitchen of salt. And because that was the nearest from where we were in Douglas Street, in when would it be? End of July, beginning of August. My grandfather would go down to the quay and buy 100 herring, have them brought home, tip them out in the backyard. And I used to have to gut them then and pack them with coarse salt, a wooden barrel,
yeah.
a layer of herring, head to tail, belly up, a layer of salt, another layer of herring on the top. And I did that for years.
Right.
And then in the winter time, on a Wednesday, this was before I went to school in Douglas because I wasn't home at lunchtime then, in a salt cod with a dry mashed potatoes and a blob of butter in a basin, and buttermilk on the table. That was on a Wednesday, and Friday it was salt herring and boiled potatoes, spuds and herring with buttermilk. That was on a Friday. That was in the winter time, not
yes.
in the summer, in the winter time. That went down as long as I can remember before
yes.
I started going to school in Douglas. He used to be so thirsty after, but it was so nice, that especially the dried salt cod. I used to love that, and it was so salty. And now they tell you salt is not good, but
true, yes. Mind you, oily fish is good for you, so you don't know whether the oily fish is doing you more good
yes,
than the salt.
Yes, yes.
Did people used to dry and salt their own cod?
It was, some of it was done on the Isle of Man, but my grandfather used to buy it, I think by the hundredweight. It used to come wrapped up in Hessian, and he used to get it through a wholesaler in Douglas. What's his name? Cretney, MHK.
Oh, yes, David Cretney.
What would be his grandfather, or his great grandfather, had a shop on the corner of Bridgeway Street and the Quay,
yes,
where Kelly's, the office people are.
Yes.
And he used to have a grocer's and the ship's chandler's. And he used to sort of import these bales of dried salt cod. They're probably about 100 weight in them. They were all just flat. And they possibly came from Iceland, I think.
Right.
How they got down from Iceland, I don't know. Probably by sailing ship.
Do you know where the salt came from? Where the salt came from? Where they were importing the salt from?
I think it came from Cheshire.
Right.
I think it used to come in by boat, and it used to come from, what's the name of the place? A little port. Was it on the Mersey?
Sort of Ellesmere Port or Ellesmere Port?
No, it was on the Liverpool side.
Right.
The Liverpool side of the river. Oh, what was the name? Can't remember. But I think it was Cheshire
right.
salt. Very, it was very coarse.
Right.
And it was never dry, it was always sort of dampish,
yes.
You know.
And it used to just be left in a pile.
It was just
inside.
Left in a pile on the ground, on the floor.
Right.
And I don't recall the ground floor being wooden.
Right.
I think it was earth. You know,
well,
sort
rather
of
than flagstones, it was
yes,
just an earth.
Yes, I think so. Yes, I can't think of anything else. I was going to tell you about something else then, and I've forgotten what it was now.
I was going to say, if you could tell me about the weighbridge, which was on the left-hand side.
Oh, yes, yes. The weighbridge was on the left-hand side of the door, and you entered by a small door for the mechanism, but the weighbridge itself was outside on the quay, and it was more used, as I said, for laying out cod that had been caught, rather than using it for weighing. But I did remember seeing one cart being weighed, and somebody was sitting up at the sort of the beam inside and moving the weight along.
Right.
I can remember that. So, and again, you had to go up to Dale's shop to get somebody to come down and work that. I suppose they had to pay each time they used
yes.
it. But the fish, the cod were anything from sixpence up to 1/6 according to the size that they were.
Right.
And as these weren't herring boats, they were smaller than herring boats. But they were like converted little yachts, they looked like to me in those days. And then smaller than that as well, there were rowing boats. Where they used to two men used to have each with a pair of oars.
Yes.
They used to row out, I don't know, a mile or two, I suppose, out from Peel up the coast.
Yes.
Mostly, I remember them going, and they used to fish for place.
Right.
And they used to come back with plaice and flounders and not many ordinary like fish like cod. Well, they were fishing for plaice, and I think there were about three of these rowing boats that used to go out and do that.
And were they fishing with nets or with lines?
No, with lines. Yes, it was lines, the same as these other little boats. It was only the sort of the herring boats that sort of fished with nets that I can remember.
And could you describe to me about the sort of the long lines that they were fishing with?
The long lines, they were, they must have been some hundreds of yards long, I think. And every so often, I don't know, every yard perhaps, there was a finer line coming from it with a hook attached.
Right.
And they used to have to bait each hook before they went to sea. And it was all coiled round on a board.
Right.
And then when they get out to where they were going, they used to sort of shoot the line out and go round perhaps in a circle. I never ever went out to sea, but I presume that was what they did. And then they would lay at the end of the line for some hours, I suppose, to wait for the bait to be taken and then haul them in again.
Do you know what they used to actually bait the lines with? What they used to use as bait?
Some it was herring mostly, I think. I think it would be herring. Sometimes they were perhaps used to call them flitters.
Oh, limpets.
Yes.
Yes.
I think they might have used limpets at times too. I've got a recollection of seeing limpets shell being smashed and I think they used limpets as well. They certainly used limpets fishing out of the breakwater or mackerel.
Right.
On lines.
And the way that you got up onto the first and the second floor, if you could tell me about sort of like the door and the staircase.
In through the door in Crown Street, just an ordinary door, and it was like a winding staircase, and the strong smell of nets and salt and things used to hit you as soon as you opened the door. And up on the top of the first flight, there'd be about 12 stairs, I suppose, up to the first floor where my grandfather's place was. And then there was just an ordinary wooden door. It wasn't paneled or anything, but just like planks, I think, tongue and groove planks, as a door with a key and a lock.
Yes.
And went in. And then the staircase continued up to the next floor, and I presume right up to the top.
Right. So that was like a wooden spiral staircase.
Yes. With just the one entrance right down at this Crown Street end, and the big doors opening on the centre out onto the quay.
Right.
So I don't notice there very much else.
And you were saying about the walls were sort of like very rough walls.
Rough walls as far as I can remember. They may have been whitewashed. They certainly weren't painted or plastered or anything that I can remember. And I don't know, it must have been 20 or 30 yards long, I suppose. Yeah. It must have been a good 20 yards long, I suppose, anyway.
With just then the central row.
Yes, just the centre of supports which would be for the floor above,
right.
I presume.
And the floor above had the same supports going all the way through.
I think that was the same all the way up. And I think that the floors above were all contained nets.
Right.
I think so. And on some of the windows on the window ledge, there may have been wooden rollers, you know, for sometimes when the nets were loose,
right.
Used to haul the nets up through a window,
right.
Perhaps on rollers, but whether I saw that there or whether I saw that somewhere else,
right.
I wouldn't be quite sure now.
Do you remember any of the other net-making factories or the sail-making lofts?
I don't remember any practice where the nets were made, nor was that was before my time, I think. I remember the old fishing boats where they used to go out. They used to go out with just sails and oars. A lot of them didn't have motor engines in them when I was very young. There was only one that I can remember that had an engine. It was called the Annie Moore. And it must have been a single cylinder engine it had, because it used to go choo, 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 like that. They used to call it the duck shooter. But the other ones, I remember big long oars, using long oars to roll them out round the point of the breakwater before they put their sails.
Right.
I can remember that. So they couldn't have had any engines in them. In the majority of them.
Do you remember there being any steam trawlers?
Oh, I remember Peel Harbour being packed full of steam trawlers. That, I don't know, that would that be in the 20s or the 30s? You could walk across from the weather glass across the other side, just on the decks of the steam trawlers. They were packed in like sardines. I think there's been as many as 110 steam trawlers in periods. The drifters, they were not trawlers. Drifters. When the herring season was at its height, end of July and August, just in the beginning of September. And they used to come from all over Scotland and from Yarmouth and Fleetwood, and even down the east coast of Scotland, they used to come from Lossiemouth and places like that.
Right.
And even up to just before the war started, when the fishing boats stopped coming around, I was in the Navy during the war, and at one time, I'd been on a minesweeping trawler up in working out of Scapaflow for nearly 3 years until, when it was September 1943, I was drafted back to Lowestoft, which was the base of the patrol service. And I'd been a signalman, and because I'd had a bit of experience then, been 3 years at sea, I was put in charge of a class of sailors who were going through for their mate's ticket, and they had to do a month's training on Mawson Semaphore and the International Code of Signals. Well, I was put in charge of one of these classes, and the first chap I met was somebody I knew in Peel. From one of these fishing boats. So I had them for a month, and then went back to sea again after that.
What do you remember about sort of, do you remember the boats getting ready to go for the mackerel across in Ireland, or do you remember the sort of getting ready for the herring season?
I don't remember that, but I had a stepfather who used to tell me about going to mackerel fishing, going down to Kinsale.
Right.
He was 10, and he was the cook on a mackerel fishing going from Peel down to Kinsale, and he was 10.
Right. What did he tell you about sort of going to sea when he was young?
Well, he didn't say very much about it, except there was a tough life. And they used to feed on fish. I don't think they ever bought any sort of staple foods other than herring or mackerel. And they had fish every day. He had to cook fish every day for both lunch and tea at night, I think. And he when he had a herring or a kipper, he ate bones and everything. He didn't leave anything.
No.
And he was a great old boy. He was 94 when he died, so it didn't do him any harm.
Oh, no. So what was his name? When was it that
his name was Bailey.
Right.
Edward Bailey. He was my stepfather,
right,
because my father died in a flu epidemic, 1918. Right. And he wasn't in the forces. He had a bad chest. He had to leave the island, and he worked at Bourneville,
right,
Cadbury's.
Oh, yes.
And I don't know how long he was away, but I've got memories, just bare memories of him. And he died November 1918, just before the war, a week before the armistice in 1918. And I remember my mother having to go away to take the body home. And it was a terrible crossing she had coming back.
Mm.
And she was in bed for a fortnight afterwards.
Right.
And my youngest sister was, I think, 18 months. I was 6.
Yes.
And I had three sisters younger
right.
than me. And then my mother was a widow until 1940, from 1918.
Right.
And she knew Ted Bailey, you know, when they were young.
Yes.
Although he was a few years older than she was. And I was already married in 1938, I married. And this was 1940, so I suppose she was running the business then.
Right.
I got married in 1938, went into the forces in 1940, and she got married then. Well, I didn't go back into the shop. I worked in a shop until I went into the Navy. And then after that, I did an emergency teacher training course.
Oh, right.
And taught in Balakameen for 30 years.
Oh, right.
So I've been retired since 1975.
Right.
So, with all these memories.
Yes. Something else I was going to ask you about was, do you remember the Herring Girls?
Yes,
right.
yes. They used to come from Scotland mostly, and they lived in the little cottages down around Market Street and Castle Street and along the Shore Road. And they used to work in where the fish place is now in the Mill Road.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't laid out like that then. It was just they had sort of troughs where they used to tip the herring in, and they used to gut them
right.
and put them into barrels, and the barrels were stacked there. And then they were brought out to the breakwater and wait for the Russian ships to come in and take
right.
them to Russia. And they also had, before you get to Penella Beach, there's a sort of a widening of the quayside. I don't know if it's still got a roof over it. Just before you turn in round to Penella Beach.
Yes. Oh yes, I know,
they used to have a station there for cutting head.
Right.
And there was another station out on the breakwater.
Right.
And these girls, they've all tagged in any old clothes at home. And they sort of oilskin aprons. And they had every finger bound round with pieces of rag. I don't know whether it was to protect them, mostly from the salt that was put on the herring rather than cutting them with
right,
the knife that they had.
Yes.
And all they used to do to me was they seemed to just take the gills out. They
right.
didn't seem to take very much of the gut out.
Yes.
The soft roll or the hard roll, they were all left in. And it only seemed to be the gills that,
right.
that came away mostly. And those barrels were filled with gut, and they used to take them out to the end of the breakwater and tip them.
Yes.
And then there used to be shoals of mackerel.
Right.
All went round waiting at Peel Breakwater for this stuff to be
right.
tipped over. Yeah, I remember that. And it was horses and carts moving the barrels of herring
right.
in the early days, and then it gradually got round to sort of motor wagons,
right.
but not so many of them.
Somebody was telling me about the fact that ships used to come in with barrels.
Yes.
Like, and were those barrels then filled up and then put back onto the same ships?
No.
So the boats were just supplying the barrels?
Yes. In fact, I've got memories of coopers making barrels.
Yes.
They used to bring the staves and everything in, and the coopers used to make them.
Right.
But I don't know that they brought in the completed barrels now.
Right.
It was probably saving space to bring them in
on
by staves. But I remember one cooper who came when I was quite young. He married and lived in Peel and died in Peel.
Right.
His name was Budge, Woolly Budge. And I think some of his daughters still live in Peel.
Right.
I think so. Lee Budgie, he married a girl named Gregor.
Oh, right, yes.
So.
Do you remember sort of any of the trading ships, sort of like the timber brigs or whatever, coming in? The sort of the big timber ships?
Coming into Douglas,
right.
Sailing ships from Norway or Sweden or somewhere.
Right.
And the Russian ships that used to come in to take the full barrels of herring away,
right.
they came into Peel. But the timber ships, they used to go into Douglas mostly, that I can remember. And there was a timber yard in Peel in those days, so I suppose there must have been a timber ship come in occasionally, but I don't really remember that. But I remember the timber yard in Mill Road, where next door to the gas works.
Right.
It's a store of some other kind now, I think, isn't it? That was Walter Quayle's timber yard.
Right.
I remember that. That was. And I don't know what he used to do with the timber in those days, because he didn't build any houses and people in those days. It was a very rare occurrence for a new house to be built in Peel when I was a boy.
Right. When you left school, sort of your contemporaries who were in Peel, did many of them go to the fishing, or were they sort of going for apprenticeships?
The contemporaries I had, if they went to school with me in Douglas, they didn't go on the fishing boats. They stayed in the elementary school in Peel.
Right.
In those days there were scholarships for the grammar school for Park Road, boys and girls. And the year that I went, we were about a dozen who went from Peel.
Yeah.
But there were years before us. As well as that, and then there were years afterwards too. The lady died in Peel last week, Mrs. Astle.
Yes.
Annie Quine. She was a contemporary of mine. We went to Douglas at the same time.
Right.
And Mrs. Sissy Roberts, you know, Mrs. lives up in Pebble Avenue.
Right.
Mrs. Isabel Dawson.
I know the name.
Well, her older sister.
Right.
She's a contemporary. We went to school. And I don't think any of the boys are there. Oh, yes, there's one, Willie Dodd, who lives up by the golf club house in Peel.
Right.
He's blind. He's a contemporary of mine. We went to school together, but I think everybody else is dead.
Yes.
But we were about a dozen of went that year. And the boys, we did 3 years in Park Road, and then we went up to St. Ninian's, which was the first year it opened. And funnily enough, Mary and I were down, I said on the phone we were going down to the museum yesterday. Some years, during the war, 1940, Mary worked in a telephone exchange in Douglas.
Yes.
And it was Mawson Semaphore in those days. And her supervisor was a Miss Knox.
Right.
Maggie Knox, who was a niece of Archie Knox. And over the years they became quite friendly. And she lived in Elm Drive in Auckland eventually. And Mary used to visit her there. And at one time she gave her a tray. It seemed to me to be copper, I don't know whether it was or not. Very, very heavy. And it had been made of Archie Knox. Right. That had something to do with it. Well, Archie taught me
My
first year at school in art. And this has been lying in the house all these years. And we keep saying, well, we must take it down to the museum.
Right.
So we eventually got around to it yesterday.
What was Archibald Knox like as an art teacher? How did you find him as a teacher?
He was a bad-tempered soul, so he was a little man,
right.
And he had this white beard. And there were all we had, we had sort of still life, a couple of vases or a jug or some fruit or something on a table, and we were around in a circle, 20-odd boys, and a drawing board with a sheet of paper and a pencil. And he used to come around, and he had a great big piece of rubber eraser. It was a great big lump of rubber. And he used to scrub it out, boys. And he had this big signet ring. And if he didn't like it, he would give you a knock right on the top of the head with this ring. And it didn't half ring. So that we had just 1 year. I think he must have retired.
Right.
That would be 24, 25.
Yes.
I think he must have retired that year. And then those, well, we used to have to go from Park Road up to the art school in Kensington Road. That was where he taught.
Right.
In the big room.
Yes.
And he used to have a little finger. It had like a great big hook on it, the nail.
Right, yes.
It was like an eagle's talon. just the one.
Just
you can remember, I don't know whether it was right or left, but he had that, and this rubber, and this ring. That's as much as I can remember. He lived in Peel Road, on the corner of Athol Street and
yes.
Peel Road. I remember him being there. Yeah.
He sounds as though he was a memorable teacher. It sounds as though he was a memorable teacher, not maybe a popular teacher, but a memorable teacher.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he wasn't a